Welcome to I Am a Film Scientist. I'm Josh Ickes.
And I am Liz Banks.
And this being the first inaugural episode, if you will, we thought it'd be cool to do a getting to know you episode where we would talk about some of our favorite movies and kind of why they are our favorites. This is by no means like a comprehensive list.
No, because trying to pick the movies that represent your likes, what you love, is like trying to pick a favorite child. And I never got what my mom was saying until I had to come up with this list. So this was not easy by any means, because I feel like by writing this list, like it like summarizes who I am. Mm-hmm. But I am so much more, and there's so many more movies I like. And it's just weird. I felt like I was going back to like my MySpace days, and like right. by picking the movies, I'm like, you'll totally get me if you just read my movie list.
Right. It's you really want to be able to define yourself within the boundary of these things. Mm-hmm. But then you're like, no, wait, I have days where I kind of feel totally like I should just be into independent movies.
Yes.
And nothing Hollywood at all. Then there's other days where maybe all you want is musicals. Mm-hmm. I mean,
not you.
No, not you. No, not me.
Like, he's talking about me.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's my voice.
Of course.
Is, you can tell I'm very
manly. He's a machismo. Mucho machismo.
I do have the ultimate edition of West Side Story, like right behind you on the shelf there. So.
So are you a jet or are you a shark?
Jet all the way.
Nice.
But I had asked you a couple weeks ago for a list of your favorite movies, mm-hmm. and you kind of redefined it when you sent me your list as movies that you have to stop when they're on the television, when you come across them on a channel, you have to stop and watch the rest of the movie.
Yes.
So that was kind of the criteria that we went with.
And I'm sure the listeners can agree that you'll be flipping through the channels. And there's pretty much nothing on, but oh, this movie, and you have to stop whatever you're doing and watch the rest of it, no matter where you pick up on it.
Right.
Yes.
But there's times also when it's not necessarily a good movie that
does
that
to
you.
No.
I have seen like Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, and I don't know why. When I used to work at a movie theater, and it played there when when I worked, and I just kept watching it. I don't know why. It was just like it was at the end of the row when I would start all the projectors.
Yeah.
And I would just kind of hang out down there, and I kept seeing it. So now it's like comfort food.
I think I know why you had to stop and watch it, because it was almost like a fantasy tale that all of these girls could fit into the same size jeans.
And really, I just wish that I could also fit in those same size jeans.
You and I both. Yes. You and I both. And those jeans take me to Greece and get me laid. I mean, that would have been great back in the day.
I would like to go swimming in the beautiful blue water and then get rescued by a hunky guy.
Oh, God. Your face is lying to me right now.
See, the listeners don't know that.
All right.
Okay. So we do have overlap on our list.
We do.
And we had no kind of set length for the list either. So. Mm-mm. If you just want to go ahead and lead off with, it's not your number one pick necessarily. It's just a movie that came to mind when you thought about movies that you loved and to put on a list that is not necessarily comprehensive.
Okay. I will start with The Princess Bride.
Okay.
I'll be still my heart. This movie just takes me back to the 80s and being a kid. And I was fortunate enough to have HBO. Mm-hmm. And so I never saw it in the theaters, but it was always on HBO.
Right.
And every time it came on, that's what I would watch. And I didn't care where it was. I knew practically all the words. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, if it is on, like, you know, Encore, Love, or whatever channel it's on, I will stop and watch The Princess Bride.
And you, what was the term you used when you wrote to me? About
I think this movie sums up my childhood.
Yes.
Yes.
Which I thought was perfect. And it pretty much does for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was always very romantical as a child.
I like that. That romantical sounds very romantic. Oh, excuse me. I'd like to get romantical with you.
I like the Muppet voice.
Thank you.
But it was like, it seemed like the fantasy of the story, like Fred Savage gets into it in the framing story, really does work on kids as well. Boy, kids.
Oh, not the kissing again.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Grandpa, go ahead and read it.
And the adventure, the swashbuckling, it's almost like a gateway movie for when you would then see other older movies. And you'd realize that William Goldman, when he wrote the script, he was actually, he's talking about all these other story elements that people use all the time, just in a very fun and interesting way. And it allowed me to pick up on things like, you know, old Errol Flynn movies and stuff like that a lot faster, I think, because I had the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yes, you did. And rodents of unusual size.
Exactly. The fire in the swamps and Six-Fingered Man.
I know. So there was like an adventure movie. There was a mystery movie, like, you know, like The Fugitive, like a kind of like trying to find this man who killed your... You know, that movie was the wife. This movie is the father. You know, this revenge-seeking story mixed in with a love story from, like, I mean, it's just, you know, one true love.
Right.
Oh, it was just wonderful.
And Robin Wright at the time was just lovely.
Yes, she was.
There was, like, absolutely nothing wrong.
Buttercup was pristine.
Yes. Exactly.
Pristine. That's a great word to use for her. And Andre the Giant, who I would see on wrestling shows with my brother watching, because when you have multiple siblings, you watch what they watch. And so I got into a little bit of wrestling in my childhood because of Andre the Giant.
See, I thought that maybe I would get into wrestling just because of him, but it never actually, it never stuck with me.
No, me neither.
Beyond going over to people's houses. As an only child, I got to watch whatever I pleased. Yes.
And that's good, because if you've ever met a man in his late 30s, early 40s, like I have, and they still watch wrestling, and they still buy the pay-per-view SmackDown, it is so painful. And then they wonder, why am I still single? It's because of the wrestling. You're not 14. You're balding. It's so sad.
I thought it was bad enough when I was in college and guys would get it in their dorm rooms.
Yeah.
It was just like, really? Is this what's going on?
Isn't like that, but didn't UFC start to come out in that time period? Like in college, like MMA or just starting to?
It was a little bit after my college.
Oh, okay. All right.
We're
not that far apart.
No, we're not.
I'm just saying, like, that's so much cooler than wrestling.
Yeah, but I think I shut that whole area off.
Yeah.
Because really, I was in my room watching Princess Bride, and waiting for everyone to get done watching wrestling or football or whatever. I think I did watch Princess Bride at college.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So give me one from your list.
Okay. And here we're going to go with overlap again, because the first movie that came to mind to me was Jaws.
Yes.
Because literally last week, I came across it on television and
stopped
and had to stop. I couldn't clean the house anymore, which, I mean, it is really difficult to get me to stop cleaning, as you can tell.
Ah!
Oh, I just want to disinfect one more thing. But Jaws to me is also a nearly perfect movie. It's a movie from my childhood, and I've seen it countless times. And I've, I don't know, purchased two or three different editions on DVD over the years. When I worked at a video store, I would often put it in. It was one of the things that was approved. So
Wait, it was approved at a video store to watch?
Yes.
Wait, but like families would come in on a Friday night?
Well, no, you couldn't do it.
Okay.
After a certain time, you could have PG things during the day. They were a little more loose, and you could have TV and PG things.
Gotcha.
So,
because I couldn't imagine a poor little 6-year-old trying to find a cartoon and looking up and seeing
the Kittner boy comes spilling out. Yes. Of the yeah. But the whole movie, when I was a kid, it was just a very exciting movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it had some laughs in it.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, and I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but it really seems to me that it's a whole story about a guy coming to terms with his responsibilities in life,
mm-hmm.
and really what kind of man he's going to be.
What kind of legacy he's going to leave.
Yes.
How is he going to be a role model to his kid?
Right. And how does he take care of this whole town who really, like a petulant child,
mm-hmm.
wants to do other things?
Yeah.
They don't really care that people are getting eaten. He just needs to stop the people from getting eaten,
mm-hmm.
but they still want to have their parties.
So when did your perception of the movie change over? Is it as you matured and started to come into your own?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It probably was when I was about 23.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that I watched it. I went and bought the, I don't know, at that point, 25th anniversary, whatever it was. And I really had a new appreciation of it.
Yeah.
And ever since then, it's just grown in my estimation from like, it's kind of a fun movie. Like,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't as cool as Indiana Jones when I was a kid, but yeah. it's still pretty good.
Nothing's as cool as Indy. I'm sorry.
But now it really is. It's, I think it's a good adventure movie and a good metaphorical movie.
Yeah. I wish I could sit here and completely agree with you on every point. And I'd probably have to rewatch it in my age at this moment, at this time. As a child, watching Jaws made me horrifically terrified of water.
Oh, yeah.
Including my own pool. And luckily, my younger sister and I weren't allowed to watch Jaws. And it was playing at like a community center for like the teenagers over the summer. And we snuck in or something like that. Or my brothers and sisters were watching it. And we decided to sneak in and watch some of it.
Uh-huh.
Bad move. I mean, bad move. Like, we were afraid of we both were convinced that a shark could come in through our pool filter and eat us. And if we were in the deep end, we were going to get eaten by a shark. And it was like a legitimate rational fear at that age.
Right.
So, even to this day, if I'm in the ocean, I need to like be near someone. Probably so I could use them as a shield in case a shark does go, here, eat them, not me, don't touch me.
I'm sure bargaining with the sharks will work like that.
Hey, as long as they're busy eating, I might have time to get away. Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, I actually think that I liked, it was one of the sequels, I don't remember because I haven't seen the sequel since I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
but the one where they're at the Sea World.
Oh, okay. Oh, God. You just made me shudder for real. Yeah.
The underwater tunnel scene.
Yes. And oh, God. Yeah. I'm really having a reaction. Yeah. So you've just proven my irrational fear, and it's back.
Yay.
I will be staying out of pools this summer. Oh, God. Yeah. That's lovely. Oh, my God. all right. Well, moving on, I guess kind of in the Spielberg genre, another movie I watched a lot as a kid was E.T.,
mm-hmm.
The Extraterrestrial, which I didn't know this at the time, but would make me absolutely love and crave Reese's Pieces. And when I go to the movies, I want Reese's Pieces,
right.
Not Reese's Cups. I need the pieces, mm-hmm. if I'm at the movie theater watching a movie. But no, I loved E.T. I loved the idea of, you know, this helpless little alien getting helped by a little boy and a little girl and, you know, the little girl dressing him up and, you know, the hijinks that followed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one part of the movie where when E.T. gets really sick and he turns white, and that creeped me out as a kid and it made me really sad and really upset.
It was just heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And E.T. is one of the first movies, I think probably the first movie that I can remember actually going to a theater to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember waiting for it to come out on video.
Yeah.
Because we would rent a video machine from the library at that point in time. And I remember asking my parents, like, how long does it take for movies to come out? Because I need to see that again.
Oh.
And once it did, I watched it. It wasn't on a loop. Mm-hmm. Like some of the other movies were. But it definitely was like my first movie crush, if that's if you can take it out of the realm of people and into yes. like an inanimate object. Well, I probably had a crush on Drew Barrymore at the time too, because that's
you're about the same age range, yeah. so it's not creepy.
No, it's not.
If you were to say I still have a crush on little baby Drew,
yes, that'd
you know,
just be weird.
I'd turn you into the authorities. No bigs. No bigs. But yeah, that moment where he's riding his bicycle and he starts to magically float in the air, mm-hmm. that still is just this, just like, I don't know, this fantastical moment where you're just rooting for them and you're like, yay.
Well, and did you ever see the re-released version?
Where they, are you talking about how they changed the guns
yes.
to walkie-talkies?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
It was... To me, that was a thing that never bothered me as a child.
I don't even know if I noticed it as a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
Except for when they did change them, then I was like, oh, where's the menace?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you really took something away from the movie by changing it. Like,
yeah, now they're just trying to make sure to spot his location and keep
right.
in contact rather than this is something we need to get control over and
yes.
fix.
Which... happily, since then, Spielberg has disowned making those changes. So he really needs to talk to his good buddy George
mm-hmm.
About that. We need to have a long sit down, a come to Jesus meeting. We should
interact. Let's. What would that meeting be like? Listen, Steve, we need to talk. Take it from me. I've butchered my movies by changing them. I thought I was doing the right thing, but I wasn't. I have ruined a generation's trust and faith in me as a director. And I don't want to see the same thing happen to you. I mean, what would happen next, you know? Jaws doesn't have teeth anymore.
Well,
he just gums people to death.
The nice thing is Spielberg has a nice legacy.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
He does.
That he can lean on.
Mm-hmm.
So even if he didn't do takesy-backsies, as it were, with the changing, people would still be like, yeah, you know, that guy's pretty
yeah.
all right. We can deal with him. Oh, and he doesn't have a whip anymore? Okay, that's a little strange.
That would not work.
So Tipo doesn't get killed at the beginning? Okay, this is very... Okay, well, you know, I guess you did some other good stuff. You'll get a pass. And eventually, you know, Jaws is finding Nemo. And
he did find Nemo. His name was Bruce.
Nice.
And he doesn't eat fish. He's in recovery from eating fish.
Fish are friends, not
fish
food.
Fish are friends. Oh, God. That was probably my favorite moment of that movie. But moving onward. Because, oh, my God, I could talk forever about just movies altogether.
As a concept, just celluloid and
yeah.
and light exposure.
Oh God, title credits. Oh my God, don't get me started.
Hey, don't mock.
I don't mock. I actually do enjoy.
Yeah, I've watched a couple documentaries about just about titles.
Okay, your turn.
Okay, my turn. Staying also in the same realm, Goonies.
No, oh, yay.
Goonies was a movie that was on a loop at my house.
Mm-hmm.
It was a movie that I had memorized.
Ah, very nice.
Yes. Which got me in trouble one time when I said one of the lines that had damn or hell
yes.
or something. That, it did not go over well with my mother.
No.
When I was, 6 or 7 or 8 or mm-hmm. however old I was. Probably, I guess, second grade. So.
Yes. Goonies in my household, because I am married to a very similar man who...
Man-child, possibly, as it were.
Goonies, if to sum up his childhood, that would be the movie.
Yes.
That was the movie that he had to rent over and over again. He made the belt, the
uh-huh.
you know, the utility belt. He tried to make slick shoes. I mean, it was just, that was him and his grandfather watched that over and over again. So if it is on any channel, we seem to find it
uh-huh.
intuitively
mm-hmm.
and turn it on.
That was not only a movie that I watched, my dad doesn't watch a whole lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, he would also watch it whenever it was on.
Yeah.
And it's one of the only movies that he quotes, which
ah.
just cracks me up to no end because it seems very odd coming out of him, but he will occasionally say, it's our time down here. Our time. And it says we're walking around a mall and you know, yes. we're supposed to go meet the Orange Julius or something. And he's like, oh, when do we have to be there? But it's our time here, Josh. But I was recently informed that it is no longer his go-to.
Oh, no, he switched up on you.
Yeah, he switched because he said he's seen it too many times. And his new movie is Old Dogs.
Wait, are you talking about the John Travolta?
Yes, I am.
You know what? I have to say, men of a certain age love that movie.
Uh-huh.
And that's who recommended me to see that movie was a man, probably mid-50s, early mm-hmm. 60s, said it was the funniest movie he'd seen all year.
Uh-huh.
And all I could see was a very bloated John Travolta with his big hair piece uh-huh. and trying to fit in. I mean, granted, there was some laughs. I won't hate
mm-hmm.
On your dad's taste, but yeah.
Yeah, I won't entirely either. I haven't seen
but
the whole
movie. But how can you replace that with Goonies?
Exactly. I think you're going from a stone cold classic.
Yes.
You would have to search far and wide amongst people I have met.
I don't know anyone.
To deny Goonies.
Well, you know what? Maybe it's just a thing of like being born in the late 70s, early 80s that Goonies is just something you hold dear to your heart. Everyone's a Goonie.
Yes.
That's what we should have been named, the Goonie generation.
Right. That would have worked.
That would have worked for me.
It worked so well for me that I watched Super 8, which came out this last summer.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it a total of 21 times.
So the new generation is the Super 8 generation, or well, you would hope it would be.
But the thing is, it's also retro, so how
it
does
is
that
retro.
Work?
Yeah.
I don't even know. But he tried to, you know, capture that same dynamic
mm-hmm.
With that group of kids, and obviously it worked for me. Goonies work so well that I will watch movies that are inspired
that are
by
similar
Goonies
to Goonies
and love them as well. So,
did they try to make an animated show from the Goonies? Did
oh.
they? I think they did, and I think it bombed. I don't know. I bet there's some nerd out there that does know. But anyway, yeah, I remember when I saw the Goonies. Like, I got so giddy of the kissing part
mm-hmm.
because that's when kissing was like, ooh, oh, my right. God. No, they kissed. Oh, my God. And then she said tongue. Oh, what do you do with that? Why is there a tongue in your mouth?
Grant doesn't wear braces.
Yeah. I loved that. And, oh, God, that character, Josh. No, it's not. What's his name?
Oh, he went on to be on 24. Sean Astin.
Not Sean Astin.
Not Sean Astin?
The other one.
Josh Brolin?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, love him now.
Oh,
love him
well,
now
yeah.
even more. What an awesome actor that I couldn't remember the name of, but I still think he's awesome. And
this is a movie podcast, folks.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't say I was smart about movies. You are the one who is smart about movies.
She just loves them.
I just love watching movies and checking out of my own reality to enjoy a movie. And then watching another movie so I don't have to deal with my life. That's the difference. Yeah. And I think the best part about watching Goonies at my house is seeing my dear, dear husband get pissed off at the end going, why isn't anyone chasing that pirate ship? There is tons of money on there. No one is moving.
And it looks like a very calm sea. You can almost just swim to the ship at that point. It's not like it's a long lost cause.
And he almost freaked out. We were in the Keys on vacation and they have like pirate ships. Like you can go on for a day and, you know, pay a buttload of money to just be on a pirate ship and sail around.
Uh-huh.
And he saw it from the, while we were driving, he was like, oh my God, the Goonies ship. Let me out. I need to go get all the riches. It was awesome. And he was so serious.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of your like retro feeling movies that made me feel good was Hook.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a kid, I loved Disney all the way at my house. We watched a ton of Disney movies. Mm-hmm. Loved Peter Pan. Even watched the Peter Pan like live action with that woman and
Mary Martin.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I bet they're the nerd who does.
Oh God, I feel so bad not.
I know
because I did. I watched that one as well.
Yeah. And, so anyway, you know, Peter Pan all the way. And so then. They come out with Hook when I'm kind of like on that, you know, tween age. Mm-hmm. It wasn't called tween back then, but right. It is now. And being just so in awe of what happened since,
mm-hmm.
Leaving Neverland, and how Wendy's this old woman now, and Peter turned into an a-hole and lost. But it's like, it's such a movie to me that has such a bigger message of like, mm-hmm. don't lose that inner child. Don't lose that sense for adventure in life and being in touch with that. And what happens when we do is we lose touch with who we really are. And I adored the movie. I really did. I didn't need Julia Roberts to be Tinkerbell.
Oh, I don't know about
I didn't need
that.
I didn't need her to be.
As a tween boy,
that was a good
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And just to derail for a second, yes, everyone, I do realize that we talked about a bunch of Spielberg movies in a row, and I put Goonies in there, and he only produced it. Richard Donner directed it. Because if I was listening to the show, I would need to make sure that someone had clarified that before I wrote an angry nerd email. So
this list is in no particular order, people. That was the disclaimer at the beginning. So save your nerd emails for
podcast. We would love the nerd emails.
Yeah, we would totally love nerd emails. I'd be like, yes, you are smarter than me.
Thank you for pointing it out.
I am not a walking Wikipedia. I never claimed to be.
I read the novelization of Hook.
Oh, okay.
When I was that age. And I also was really into Robin Williams at the time.
Yes, I was too.
I think it was before he really started to become overly cartoonish, mm-hmm. which is, you know, hard to say when he portrayed an alien on television for several years. But I did. When I was a kid, I had Mork suspenders, actually the rainbow suspenders.
Aww.
Yeah. And the Hook, to me, is almost the first time that we did like a gritty reboot.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't horribly gritty.
No.
But the Lost Boys were skate punks.
Yeah.
Basically, and, you know.
Rufio. Rufio. Yeah, they had mohawks, I mean.
Yes, exactly.
And they skateboarded and, you know.
Yeah.
But their food looked disgusting.
Oh.
Ugh. God.
It looked like paint.
Yeah.
Just massive amounts
paint
of paint.
And jail food.
Yes.
Like, oh, God.
It was, it wasn't necessarily a world that I would want to live in.
No.
Like some of the other things. Like, you know, I kind of want to live with the Goonies. Like, it kind of seems like a fun existence. And I think that's part of the charm of Hook, actually, is he balances the bitter with the sweet very well,
mm-hmm.
of, okay, this is a lost time and you had a great time here, but you really want to go home.
Yeah. And even Captain Hook became more likable, like,
yes.
which was really odd, you know, wanting a son and all of the stuff. And, so I thought it was a much needed movie for me. Nobody else.
Yeah, lots of other people don't need that movie, apparently.
Yeah.
But I think this is in danger of turning into Dawson's Creek here with his idolization of Spielberg. So we should probably move.
We should go way off of Spielberg.
Go way off to David Fincher land.
Okay.
And on your list, the first few entries on the list, I had tried to kind of match yours,
mm-hmm.
And either just straight up match it or provide an alternative, and you had Fight Club.
I did.
I had Seven.
Yes,
although
I like Seven too.
I might have to change Seven for Zodiac.
Ooh, yeah, that was a good one too.
I think it's a more mature movie,
mm-hmm.
And it's almost a companion piece,
mm-hmm.
to Seven. In that they're, you know, both stories about people looking for a murderer, looking for the person who did a thing.
Yeah.
Zodiac especially is done in an almost 70s style,
mm-hmm.
of like a newspaper movie,
yeah.
or an investigation kind of All the President's Men kind of a thing. But both of the movies, and this is a thing that I'm not actually a nihilist, but I do find it interesting. Both of the movies have this thread of nothing that the investigators do actually affects the outcome.
Yeah.
You spend all this time with them. In Seven, especially, it was the proto CSI kind of a thing going on.
Yeah.
Where you get through all the Dante's Inferno references. Mm-hmm. And he has to buy the Cliff's Notes version of it.
Which was the only book I liked in my high school English class.
I think that says something about you.
I wore a lot of black.
I bet you were very deep and misunderstood.
Yes. And I smoked cigarettes.
a lot of eyeliner and listening to The Cure. But the thing that I loved about Seven when it came out was that you spend all this time with them.
Yes.
And really, that all just becomes character. Mm-hmm. For that final scene, because John Doe's plan the whole time has been to walk in.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually affect that change in any way.
Nope. His masterpiece was finished.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was great, because the whole thing is about getting the other characters to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Zodiac, while it doesn't have the same intelligence behind the motive that we get exposed to, does have very much the same. It's just these guys going through the motions for years and years, and they can't get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is more about the obsession of the pursuer, I think.
Yeah.
But
and don't you need that? I mean, if you're going to be chasing these, you know, serial killers, mm-hmm. don't you also need to like be able to pull from that almost kind of like same place?
Right.
That obsession, that need to. They have a need to kill, a need to prove a point, a need to, you know, make their masterpiece, whatever it is.
Right.
And the one searching also has this obsession to find him. So it's kind of that same desire that, not to say that murdering and looking for something is the same thing.
Oftentimes when I can't find my keys, I'm like, you know what? This is the same as murdering like six or seven people in a very planned
out. Where the hell is my phone? All right, I'm going to decapitate someone and put their head in a box.
Because it's the same.
It's the same thing. All right, I went out on a limb. I'll retract all that I said. That was dumb. All right, moving on.
But you had Fight Club, everything to say about.
I did. I loved Fight Club. I loved the way it was shot. It was just, it was not like anything I had seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, so it had like this really new feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it had, I mean, the acting I thought was really great. It was really well done. The message of like, you know, this buying and, you know, using our material things to define who we are. And they go to this gritty primal, you know,
right.
Let's just go back to our instincts to beat the shit out of each other and like feel some real pain because your pain of your job, right. You know, not fulfilling your soul is enough. And then, of course, that final twist at the end that
mm-hmm.
it was just Edward Norton the whole time and that this was someone he created because of. He just
needed a way to deal with.
Yeah.
The thing I thought was interesting about Fight Club is, I mean, as a movie, I mm-hmm. really enjoyed it. How it's taken off as like a cult kind of movie. And I think people like get not always the right message out of it.
Yeah.
But also the fact that when I was watching it, to me, it mirrored A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And then when I read the book, I found out that like A Clockwork Orange, the last chapter of both books was never filmed.
Oh.
Which changes the message of both movies, I would
Great.
Think.
Great. Now I got to read two more books. I'll add it to my Kindle.
The ending of Fight Club almost has a pseudo-romantic
mm-hmm.
Thing going on. I mean, you get the first, well, I guess it's the second usage of actual guitar music.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else has been very, that Dust Brothers techno through the whole thing. There's the one scene where you get the Tom Waits song,
mm-hmm.
And then you get the Pixies there at the end. And you get that it's a departure. And I think the more interesting thing than realizing that it's been him the whole time
mm-hmm.
is how has that affected Marla?
Yeah.
And who is she actually? Like, because mm-hmm. you realize you've been seeing everything through his distorted lens.
Yes.
And really, is she as dark as she seems to be?
Mm-hmm.
Because she seems kind of sweet.
She does.
There at the end.
She is sweet at the end. And I love the scene where, the kitchen scene where she's like comes in and she's talking to him and, mm-hmm. you know, and then she comes back around. And he's being a total asshole to her.
Right.
That's what some women go through. Like, it's like, it's a really realistic thing to like be with someone intimately and they're in one mood 1 second and then the next second something's totally wrong and nothing okay and get out of here and I'm sick of you and, you know.
I like
not that I'm in that kind of relationship.
I do like that apparently guys and gals get totally different things out of the movie sometimes. No. That's wonderful. It's
ladies, if you are in a relationship with a man who thinks he's two men, you need to ask for help. You need to get out. Yeah.
Okay, so that was that mine or was that yours?
Well, it's kind of both
of ours.
Kind of
both of ours, yeah.
Yeah.
So my next movie would be Scream.
Scream.
Yeah.
Great, like, teen thriller.
Yes.
Just great all around.
And I rewatch all three and now all four Scream movies every year,
mm-hmm.
at least once a year.
Is it around Halloween time?
It is around Halloween time, oddly enough. But the first movie is just, it's so well shot.
Yes.
It's well acted.
The writing of it's making fun of itself.
Yes. Going back to Dawson's Creek, that's who wrote it, Kevin mm-hmm. Williamson. When I first saw it, I didn't have as much, as deep a a pool of knowledge of slasher films as I do now. But even then, like, I recognized that they're taking all these tropes and commenting on them. And then also using them.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's this great thing
like
where
we're going to make fun of ourselves and then do exactly what we said we're making fun of.
And you will be scared.
And you're still going to pee your pants a little bit.
Yeah, we're telling you that this guy, when he leaves, something bad's going to happen.
And it does.
And it does. And you, like we told you, suckers, and you fell for it.
It was great.
And it is. It's just a movie that I can watch just about any time it's on.
And I'm sure Neve Campbell didn't hurt at all.
No. actually, Rose McGowan
doesn't hurt either. Yes, yes.
Oddly enough, Skeet Ulrich,
mm-hmm.
I never found all that charming, but Matthew Lillard.
Oh my God, yes.
He gets a pass on almost anything else he does because he was in that movie and he's just so.
He's just such a typical high school douche.
Like, yeah, exactly.
So perfectly played.
Yep.
I don't know if it's the writing or just what, you know, what he brought to the table, but uh-huh. whatever it was, it worked. It worked beautifully.
The whole end scene
mm-hmm.
Where they're stabbing each other.
Yeah.
And he doesn't die.
yes.
But he goes, my mom's going to be so mad.
Yes.
I love that part. It's just the delivery is perfect.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was great. I loved, I should have written all this stuff down. Courtney Cox was good in it
because mm-hmm.
I didn't like Courtney Cox in Ace Ventura. I didn't think she was.
I didn't like Ace Ventura.
Yeah. I liked it for the fart jokes because I was also like really young at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought she played a really great character and I loved how their love sparked on the set. But mm-hmm. now it's over. So
done. They killed it.
But maybe kind of on this, I don't know. How much time are we at? Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Kind of like another movie that made fun of itself
mm-hmm.
in a really smart way is one of the ones I picked, which is Adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that one in the theater. I kind of wasn't like planning on seeing it, but my friend was like in film class
right.
at the time. She's like, oh my God, we have to see this movie. And just the opening scene
mm-hmm.
where his inner monologue is self-deprecating
mm-hmm.
and he's putting himself down. And I was going, why haven't we seen this before? Because anyone with, you know, substantially low self-esteem has those inner monologue conversations. You're a piece of crap. Look at you. You're fat. You're disgusting. You know, Even I know, you can't believe it. But even I have those moments. And I just, that hooked me in and took me along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And then I loved how it was it was kind of like a taking being John Malkovich, mm-hmm. because, you know, same guy wrote it, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Lori nerds. And like how it's being pulled off of that, you know, so it's very realistic. So it almost feels like a biography.
Right.
And it just takes like as the characters, him and his twin brother, are interacting with each other, mm-hmm. the movie starts to shift as his twin brother starts, well, I'll help you. I'll help out.
Right.
It starts to turn into his horror movie because of his influence.
Right.
Into it. And, oh, yeah.
That's, as a writer, it's just a great movie because you do have those two sides of your brain,
mm-hmm.
that literally there are times when you're making a decision of, okay, is this going to be a sex scene or is it going to be just a scene where they talk and then leave?
Mm-hmm.
And the commercial side of you wants to go, oh, well, it's a sex scene, obviously. They yeah. say two words and then there's 4 minutes of them ripping each other's clothes off.
Yes.
But the artist side of you really wants to just stick with the conversation and get to know the characters more, mm-hmm. because that's what's important. And
or a potential sex scene in this movie turns into Nicolas Cage jerking off in the middle of the night. Making it all so much more real.
The party scene is just so horrifying.
Yes.
When it's just so awkward. It has a lot of the cringe humor mm-hmm. to it. Someone's phone is.
That's probably mine.
That's probably yours. But yeah, it is a movie that I think some people deride it at times for having its cake and eating it too, or trying mm-hmm. to, which is, to me, is sort of the point of the movie. That it is. It straddles this line between a totally indie, narcissistic project and a utterly commercial one.
It really does. And I mean, they got the actors to do it.
Yes.
They got the bill to promote it either way.
Right.
Oh, just, I loved that movie. And that's a movie I definitely stop and watch.
Yeah.
And because it also, I have ties from growing up in Miami. Mm-hmm. There's like this whole Everglades thing and, you know, growing up in Miami and traveling to Naples on a regular basis. I spent a lot of time in the Everglades and the people
poaching flowers.
Yes. I was trying to get high off at orchids, which is, I mean, and it actually made me so interested. I started to like research like, okay, were these guys actually twins? Is this flower really real?
Right.
You know, like it felt so real.
Right.
The movie felt so real to me.
It's a rabbit hole of details. Like,
it is.
There are just so many layers that you could pull back, and they're just all inside the writer and director's head, I think. That's where all the layers lead. And Nicolas Cage can't be undersold for those two roles. Like,
I've got to say, like, Nicolas Cage can be really obnoxious.
Yes.
A really obnoxious actor. And this role, I think, really put him in good standing with me.
It capitalized on that he can be really obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things like Tom Cruise in Magnolia.
Where, oh, God.
Where it totally plays to the type where you either have, oh, okay, he's being all mopey and method, or he's being manic and crazy.
Yeah.
And you kind of get both sides there, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's,
and those two came around the same time period,
yeah,
in a couple of years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right, let's do a couple more. I'm gonna skip and do some classic movies. I'm going to do a trifecta, a hat trick, if you will, of two Hitchcocks, Psycho and Shadow of a Doubt.
Oh, okay.
And Citizen Kane.
All right. Well, the only one I can talk to you about is Psycho.
Okay.
Since I haven't seen the other two.
Psycho.
But I do know what Rosebud is.
Okay. Very good.
So, no spoiler alert for me.
Okay.
But I know nothing else about the movie.
Oh, that's really sad.
I'll watch it.
You should at some point in time.
I will.
Psycho, for me, is a movie like I watched once again when I was in like second or third grade.
Oh, God.
I distinctly remember.
How were you allowed to watch that movie? Because you were only child and you got away with anything?
Pretty much.
Okay.
I remember we lived with my grandparents at the time, and I remember watching it in that house. And it was just such an introduction to black and white movies.
Yeah.
Which, you know, were much more prevalent than they are now. You would always have to see them on Sundays or whatever. But still, to this day, it's just such an engrossing movie. A couple years ago for Halloween, they played it, I believe it was at Soldier Field.
Okay.
Up in Chicago. And we went to the screening of it. And it was just awesome to see literally a stadium
full
of people watching this movie.
Wow.
And people were shocked because they didn't know the twists. I mean, of course, there's the big twist that everyone talks about of the mother, but not being actual.
Yeah.
But there's the earlier twist that the story follows Marion Crane for the first half hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you realize it's not her story.
No.
in the famous shower scene. And it shifts to Norman. And I don't know. It's just, it instilled in me like a love of Alfred Hitchcock. I used to watch the series when I was a kid. It got me into the Twilight Zone.
Yes. Oh, I was big Twilight Zone fan. And Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Television.
And then the other two, Shadow of a Doubt and Citizen Kane, I watched for the first time, both around the same time. That's why they're together for me. And that would have been like early in my high school career. And I wound up actually writing my senior thesis on Orson Welles, because I was a huge nerd even back then.
The nerd has stayed with me.
But Shadow of a Doubt is just, it's a perfect picture of a small town, idyllic life, interrupted by a dark outside force who also happens to be someone you love. And it's very cringe inducing.
Wow.
Because you don't know who knows what when and how much the uncle is playing versus is he actually a killer.
Wow.
And it's just has this dark undertone where the main character's father has these kind of running contests with his neighbor where they come up with gruesome murders as just what would be unsolvable. And it's one of those things that it's just a very odd sense of humor. It's very Hitchcockian. And you know, I fell in love with it, and it made me go more into Hitchcock's films.
Yeah,
definitely. And the Citizen Kane, I bought the script as soon as I'd watched the movie, and I've seen the movie, you know.
Isn't like a required movie to watch if you're
yes
love movies?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't get the syllabus.
And before I realized that it was a required movie, I had watched it, and then I went, oh my god, I need to find out more about this.
Yeah.
And it led me into watching other movies and watching like John Ford films, because Orson Welles says all you need to do is watch John Ford films. You can learn everything about filmmaking in 10 minutes, supposedly. All the technical aspects. And I don't know. It's if any of those black and white films came on right now,
I would
literally stop.
Especially if you're cleaning the house. Like, I have to stop right now.
If you saw my house, you would understand that it wouldn't be that difficult to do. Okay.
Well, Psycho is a movie that I saw the remake of. Mm-hmm. And from what I had heard, the remake was almost shot for shot.
Right.
They did their best to make it like so you could put the two next to each other and it would be the same. And I remember I was going to the theater to see it, and my mom stopped me and pleaded with me not to see that movie. And I'm like, Mom, why? She goes, I saw it when I was about your age, the black and white version of course, and it traumatized me. And she says it was still to this day, that was the scariest movie she has ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And she cannot watch scary movies because of the original Psycho. Nice. So I went, sweet, I can't wait to see this movie.
It's going to be awesome.
And then because I think of the timing, yeah, you wouldn't have never seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But being a teenager and seeing that, I was like, oh, okay, cool. He's mom. Right. You know, like,
right.
So detached.
Yes.
Such a different generation. Like, yeah, I've seen worse.
You see worse on network television.
Oh, God, yeah.
I went and saw the remake in the theaters as well. And even though I really like Gus Van Sant, it's a testament to how you can take the same ingredients and it does not necessarily make the same cake.
No.
His was kind of flat and lifeless.
It was. Yeah, it was. In comparison.
Yes. Okay, you want to do one more?
All right.
I think we're getting
close to the top. Oh, God. This is a hard one. What do you save for the last one? I mean, honestly, I haven't even gotten through half of my list.
No, the list just goes on and on. But that's the problem with the list of movies you love.
It is. List of movies I love. All right. I guess I'm going here.
All right.
I'm sorry. Braveheart.
Okay.
I saw Braveheart. It was the opening day, the midnight showing.
Seriously?
Did not know it was going to be 3 hours long, but and I was exhausted from working all day, but I was wide awake watching this whole movie. Part of me is because that is my heritage.
Mm-hmm.
I am from the Forbes clan. That is my heritage. I know that because there's a plaque in my house that has a piece of the plaid. And really just seeing this beautifully done love story and revenge story and conquering and overcoming and underdog and just all of this stuff mixed in with great humor. I mean, I loved the Irishman who talked to God, you know, I just talked to God back in the day when that wasn't allowed.
Right.
You had to go through someone to talk to God.
Yeah, you kind of got burned at stakes occasionally if you did that kind of thing.
Yes, that would have been that you were a witch
right.
or a warlock. But be PC out there, you know.
Want to include everybody.
I love, being a girl when they flashed, not knowing you didn't wear anything underneath your kilt.
Uh-huh.
That was exciting.
especially at, 2:15 in the morning, I would imagine.
Yes, when they flashed their front privates, and then they flashed their back privates, and then someone gets shot the bow and arrow in the ass and falls over. I mean, granted, war is not funny, but that was funny to me.
Okay, war is sometimes funny.
War
is occasionally very amusing.
Yeah. Yeah. And the connection with the French princess who is in this marriage to a gay man, like way back then, it was prominent. And she knew it. And she didn't want to be there. And just hearing this love story and how she was just so passionate about what the movement was going on when she was, you know, it was her kingdom,
right,
that she had married into or was going to marry into or whatever. Yeah.
See, now I feel bad because I've probably seen Braveheart twice.
Ah.
And it was a very long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't dislike the movie.
No. You know,
by any means, but geez, now I feel like a lesser.
Oh, God, don't. Please. I haven't seen Citizen Kane, and this is a movie blog, a movie podcast.
That's true. That's true.
That is like, I should be banned.
Yeah. I actually should. We should stop the show right now and watch it.
Replace. I need someone to replace her.
You have to turn around and watch it right now. Okay. I guess for my final one, I'll keep it with an epic with battles and whatnot, would be Seven Samurai.
Ah, haven't seen it.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Am I going to be banned again?
Yeah. It's actually on the shelf just to your left down there at the bottom, the Criterion Collection
edition.
It's
got a very nice cover.
Yes, it's very stylish looking cover. But it's a movie I hadn't actually seen until, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I mean, it also is like a 3-hour long movie. I literally turned around and watched it again.
Wow. Back to back?
Yes.
Damn. You had nothing to do that day.
Not a thing.
Actually, I lost my job, but.
Sometimes you got to find comfort where you can take it.
Yeah.
First of all, it was the basis for movies diverse as A Bug's Life.
Really?
And The Magnificent Seven.
Okay, so, now I have to watch it.
Yeah. So I was very familiar with this, with the basic story. The filmmaking techniques used in it were revolutionary at the time, and they're still just like really exciting.
When about did this movie come out?
Why would you have to make me seem... Okay, I'm going to...
I don't know.
Throw out there... I was going to say 54. Yeah. Okay. I thought 54 was maybe too early even. But wow. Yeah. No, it was 1954. There's during the battle scenes, there's these wonderful just tracking shots of running alongside the horses, running alongside the men as they're going to clash into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at camera technology at that time.
Did they even, so they actually had to build the tracks?
Yes.
Wow.
And it's a big ass camera. I mean, today, even to lay dolly tracks it's a pain.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point in time, to choreograph all this and your film magazines weren't as long as they are and you couldn't shoot digital. Looking at all the planning that they had to do for this. So from a film nerd perspective, it's very exciting, but it's also very visceral. And there's a lot of times, at least me personally, when I think of older movies, I think of there's very clean feeling to a lot of them. You're on stages. It's very, you understand that there's a certain way that people act. And in this movie, it's very earthy.
Mm-hmm.
And, these people are filthy
These
battles. And there's mud everywhere and there's arrows flying, which is terrifying because you have to realize that.
And this is way before 300.
Totally. There's actual arrows actually flying through the air.
Wow.
And Kurosawa was kind of famous for torturing his lead actor, Mifune. He did it in several other movies. He actually shoots arrows very near to him.
Wow.
During some of these scenes. But it's a really exciting, epic action movie. And there's a lot of just funny bits in it, which I don't know. It's playing from across 5 decades ago,
mm-hmm.
and in another language.
Yeah.
And it's still funny.
Wow.
So that's why I would recommend it. And I have to watch it even though it's a long ass movie. I have to watch it anytime I see it.
All right, kids. So what did we learn today? We learned that these two nerds love movies and a lot of movies. We learned that I should probably watch Citizen Kane in the next, I don't know, month. I learned that getting shot in the ass by an arrow is funny.
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious, even if it's in war. And that's what I learned today.
I learned that I underestimated Braveheart, probably. I feel kind of bad for that. Learned that we had a lot of overlap. I feel good about. And there's none of your movies that I would just outright dismiss.
Good.
I kind of hope that we would have a fight, but.
Well, we can have a fight.
Okay.
Event. Not on this show, but we will.
Oh, I just thought right now, let's just start socking each other. Just.
Oh!
That would actually fit in with the last two picks.
That would.
Have some massive battle here in the studio. Okay.
Well, this was The Film Scientist. I am Liz Banks.
I'm Josh Ickes. Thanks for listening.
And go watch a movie.